On Edition. I'm Nina Keck in for Jane Lindholm. It's October, but we're still enjoying mild fall temperatures, at least this week. People are picking pumpkins and apples and other late season goodies from the garden, but there's always a hint of the frost to come in the air. So what should people be doing at this time of year to get their gardens ready for winter? What should you plant now for next spring? Is now the time to cut back and prune? And what's the best way to do that? What about lawn care and your shrubs and bushes? What can we do to make sure those do well over the winter? Gardening expert Charlie Nardozzi is my guest today. He's host of the Vermont Garden Journal on VPR and a garden consultant. He's also a favorite on Vermont Edition. Charlie, welcome back.
It's nice to be here, Nina.
So listeners, what gardening questions do you have for Charlie Nardozzi? There are lots of ways you can get them to us. You can post them on our Facebook page, email them to us at vermontedition@vpr.net, or give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. So Charlie, what are you still harvesting right now?
Well, we just harvested a bumper crop of sweet potatoes.
Oh.
They're huge. They're whoppers. I think it's a reflection of the real hot summer that we had, and we were good about keeping them well watered. So we got some really big sweet potatoes this year. Unfortunately, we had to share them a little bit with the mice and some voles, so there is some damage on those. But they'll be okay. You know, you can cut those areas out, let them cure, which is what they're doing right now in a warm garage for a couple weeks, and then you can store them in a 55-degree room for a number of months. The key with sweet potatoes, though, Nina, right now is if you are growing them, don't just dig them out of the ground and cook them up, because they'll taste like cardboard.
Huh.
They need to have some time to transition those carbohydrates into sugars, and that's why you want to wait a month or so before you start eating your sweet potatoes.
I didn't know that, so you have to let them sit.
Yes, let them sit.
Go figure. Well, how has this summer been for gardeners? What have you heard from folks? I mean, it was dry, but I guess if you kept up on the watering, that probably helped. But what kind of a summer has it been?
Well, in general, I think people had a very good summer, especially with the annual flowers and the vegetables we were just talking about. Some places did have it so dry that the perennial flowers were very short-lived, in the sense that something would flower and then would pass by really quickly because it was hot and dry. For most part, I think people had enough water in the ground and they were watering enough to get a pretty good harvest. So I'm still talking to people who are harvesting tomatoes and don't really know what to do with them anymore. There's just too many of them. So they're thinking of all these different ways to use tomatoes. And there are people, we've still harvested some basil from our garden. So as this fall continues, in which, you know, just as a little side caveat, I have noticed that over the last bunch of years, our falls tend to be getting longer and longer. They tend to stay warmer and go longer before we get a lot of killing frosts, or we might get a killing frost and then you get another month or two of really nice weather. So I think that is a reflection of a changing climate, and it's giving gardeners a great opportunity to grow more food later into the season. Not only have to put it up, but you can just keep picking it from the garden.
Well, it's interesting you talked about some herbs. I know I brought my basil and rosemary in when it was cold maybe a week or so ago. I was a little nervous, but it's mm-hmm. back out, and it's going gangbusters.
Yeah, it's really nice. And one thing I did with my basil was kind of interesting is I whacked it back about a month ago, just kind of cut it almost down to the ground, left a little skeleton of branches, and lo and behold, it leafed out again, and now I'm picking some leaves off of it. So you can get creative with this longer season that we seem to be getting in the fall.
Listeners, you can join our conversation today about late season gardening with Charlie Nardozzi by calling 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Let's go to the phone lines now. People are already trying to weigh in today. Let's talk to Thomas, who's calling from St. Albans. Hi, Thomas. Welcome to the show. Go ahead.
Thank you. I was just wondering, I was given some hostas, and I didn't know if it was too late to plant them this year, and if it is, what's the best way to keep them over the winter?
Hostas. Well, it's never too late to plant hostas, and it's never too early to plant hostas. In fact, you can plant hostas almost any time, except when the ground is frozen. So, yes, go ahead, put them in the ground. Of course, cut them all back, so cut all that foliage off. Plant them in the ground, amend the soil with some compost. And then the real key is, and this is not just true for things you're planting now, but things you might have planted earlier this season, is to water them well. The ground is very dry, and just going over there and putting a bucket of water on them is really not enough. You have to let the water really soak in, get into that soil, and then do it consistently. So even though there may not be much foliage growing on the plant anymore this time of year, those roots are going to continue to grow in the soil until it gets down below 40 degrees. So that could be November sometime. So you want to keep watering that plant so those roots will have the moisture they need to really expand and get established. And that way you'll avoid any kind of winter injury.
Great question. I have, Charlie, a large overgrown flower garden in my backyard, and I did not have as much time to stay on top of it this summer, so it's looking kind of ratty, but I seem to say that every year. I'm wondering, what should I do now to get it ready for winter? In years past, I've taken kind of a blitzkrieg approach and just cut everything down to the quick. Is that what I should be doing?
Yes. For a perennial flower garden, you generally want to cut it all the way down to a few inches of stubble on the ground. If you have a very exposed site, a lot of wind blows through there, you might even want to leave a little bit higher stubble, maybe 6-8 inches of it, and that would be to catch any snow that might be blowing around. And because snow is an excellent insulator in the winter, so if you can have a nice consistent snow cover on your perennial flower garden, you're going to have less chance of things dying in the winter or heaving out of the ground when we have those freeze-thaw cycles that often happen in the winter. So cutting it down is a good idea. Cleaning up all that foliage, especially if there was some damage on this foliage from diseases or insects, you want to remove that so they don't have a chance to overwinter in that same spot. And then this is a great time of year, and I know you're not going to like to hear this, Nina, but to weed. Did he say weed in October? Yes, he did. So after,
say it ain't so.
Right. After a good rainstorm or a good watering, if we don't get any rainstorms, it's good to go out there and pull out those perennial weeds, the dandelions, the plantains, the quack grasses, all that kind of weeds that will be the first thing to start growing in the spring. If you do it now, you'll be so much happier next April and May because there won't be as many weeds out there to pull. And, you know, Nina, you got some time on your hands right now. Come spring, maybe not so.
That's very true. And maybe you saw my flower garden because it is looking pretty weedy, so I'll get busy. Let's go back to the phone lines. Chris is calling from Richmond. Hi, Chris. What's on your mind?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call, Charlie, and thanks for the years of good advice. It sounds like you're having the same problem with mice and voles eating your tubers that I'm having. But in my case, it's been growing, and I lost about a quarter of my potato crop this year. Do you have any advice about how to decrease that?
Yeah, it's kind of tough because all the gardening techniques you want to do to have a good potato crop, whether it be sweet or Irish or white potatoes, is, you know, adding mulch and letting the plants grow and get bushy. All those are great ways for mice and voles to hide around your plants. And then, of course, they just kind of tunnel in whenever they're a little hungry, a little peckish, to go in there and have sweet potato snack for dinner. So one thing you could try to do is one I'm actually kind of considering for my sweet potatoes, because I grow them in raised beds, and elevated raised beds that are up maybe 10 inches off the ground. And I might consider putting down some wire mesh around the base, maybe digging them down into the soil a little bit and around the base of the plant, or even on over the top of the plant, and let the vines grow through it. And the wire might be enough to kind of discourage them. You know, I'm not getting enough damage now that I could say I lost the whole crop, but I would like to discourage them a little bit. So that's one thing you can do. Another is to space plants a little further apart. And if you're using mulch, use a mulch that's not going to allow them to hide underneath it. And keep the plant, keep the area kind of more open, because the more open an area is, the more less likely they are going to want to run across it, because there's hawks, there's foxes, there's other things that might want to eat them. So they like having places where they can hide and then dash and eat. So if you can open up the area a little bit, it might be less likely that they're going to go in there. And, of course, you know, there are other animals out there. If you can encourage wildlife to be in your area, foxes, bobcats, things of that nature, they'll probably help with the rodent control.
We got an email from Brad. He says, I'd like to know the best way to store winter squash. Preparation needed? He wonders. He says he does have a root cellar available.
Well, it's great he has a root cellar, because that's going to really help. First of all, you have to kind of know that all winter squash are not created equal. There are certain ones that will last a long time in storage, Hubbard squash, for example, and others that will last maybe a few months, and then you better be eating them up, because no matter what you're doing, they're probably not going to last too much longer. But ideally, a winter squash, like a kind of a 35 to 50 degree temperature range and more of a moderate humidity. So a place that is kind of moist. They don't want to be really dry, so they want more moisture. I think more like 50, 60% moisture. So if you have a root cellar, that's going to work perfect for them. You can moderate the moisture and a little bit of the temperature too, depending on how your root cellar is oriented, to get those conditions. But to step back one step is to, the first thing you want to do is after you harvest it, you want to do just like I did with the sweet potatoes. You want to let them cure. You want to let those skins get nice and tough and cure for maybe a week or two in a warm, well-ventilated area. Then after that period of time, you move them to the root cellar for storage in the winter.
Listeners, if you're just tuning in, it's our late-season gardening show on Vermont Edition. Gardening expert Charlie Nardozzi is my guest. Do you have a question about something in your garden? What kind of a harvest did you have this year? Now's your chance to get tips from an expert. You can call us at 1-800-639-2211 or post your comments or questions for Charlie on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Let's go back to the phones and take a call from Susan, who's calling from White River Junction. Hello, Susan. Welcome to Vermont Edition.
Hi. I was just calling because I have an iris that's out in my front porch area that just sprouted up about a month ago and now has three buds on it.
Did you say iris?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, you'll see that happen with certain perennials. I actually had my neighbor, I was walking the dogs, and my neighbor caught me as I was walking them. He said, "Charlie, I think my crabapple is flowering." And it could very well do that. So you'll get flowers that will occur. A lot of times they will occur as a result of stress, and we've had a lot of stress on plants because it's been so hot and dry this summer. So that the plants will have a response to stress is often to, I've got to set seed as fast as I can. And, of course, to do that, they need to flower. So you will get plants sometimes that will actually set some flowers. The other thing might be happening is that there are reblooming iris varieties. And these are varieties that were particularly bred to rebloom later in the season. So you might want to check that, too, to see if you happen to have one of those varieties, which would be great because you have irises in the fall.
Rabia from Norwich wrote in. She said, "I have read conflicting website opinions by seemingly well-qualified people regarding what to do with soil and fertilization when planting a young tree. Some say add compost and fertilizer. Some say don't because it encourages roots to not move beyond the fairly small area of enriched soil as they grow. So, Charlie, what do you recommend for a very small tree?"
That's a great topic to bring up because this is a good time of year to plant trees, especially deciduous ones, because the soil is still very warm and you'll get a nice couple months of root growth in there and the tree will be set up for next spring. As far as how to do it, yes, there's been a lot of conflicting information out there. The latest research that I know of, and actually this might be a little radical for a lot of people, but it recommends, first of all, digging a hole two times as wide as the root ball and not as any deeper. So you want to keep it relatively shallow. You might want to even raise it up a little bit if you have clay soil because you want to make sure you have really good drainage in your soil. Because poor drainage with trees and shrubs, that's a death knell for them. That will kill them faster than anything else. Then once you've done that, you want to use that native soil to backfill. You do not want to add compost or soil amendments at that point. Now, that being said, if you have really sandy soil or really bad soil, like real gravelly soil kind of thing, you might want to add something in there just so there's something a little more nutritious for the plant to grow on. But that also, you should be rethinking where you're planting that tree, because if you have really bad soil there, probably nothing else is growing around there, and it's probably a good reason not to put your tree there. The other thing you might want to do is when you buy this tree from a nursery, you'll see that, of course, it has soil around its root ball, is to actually wash all that soil off of the root ball. Now, that is very counterintuitive for a lot of people. It's like, there's soil there. We can't wash it off. The tree will die. But research has shown that by washing off all that soil, it exposes the roots so you can see how the roots are forming. And if the roots are starting to encircle around the crown of that tree, that is not a good thing. Because what will happen is that if you plant that tree in there and you don't correct that root, in about 5-6 years, you have this beautiful tree, and all of a sudden it starts dying, and you really don't know why. And if you dig it up, you'll see that that root got so big that it strangled itself. So after you've washed off all that soil, you can prune the roots so they can spread them out away from the crown of the tree, and then plant it that way and keep them really well watered. That is the most recent recommended technique for planting trees and shrubs, including evergreens, by the way, or including trees that have leafed out already. If you keep them well watered, the tree should bounce right back and do very well.
Charlie, you're hosting a series of gardening and composting workshops across Vermont this month. Just, I think this week you were in Rutland and Bakersfield. October 17th and 18th, I think you're scheduled to be in Orleans and then Woodstock. Talk about what these workshops are all about and how folks can take part if they want to.
Yeah, these are workshops I'm working with the Vermont Community Garden Network, who have put these together. And I've been doing a number of gardening workshops for a number of years with them. But this year we decided to focus on composting, particularly on community composting, which, of course, you know, the state law 148 is mandating that everyone start doing some form of composting, or at least deciding they can't let their kitchen scraps go into the waste stream any longer. So a lot of things are changing in the world of waste management, and we thought it would be an opportune time to start talking about composting, not just on a home garden level, which is very important, of course, but also on a community level. So these workshops are being held in schools around the area, around the state, where we're getting people together to talk about what it's like to compost in a little bit larger scale, like at a school, for example, or at a community garden. How do you do that? What are the advantages and disadvantages? And then after the workshop itself, we have a free community composting forum at each one of the sites that you mentioned. That starts at 6:30 in the evening. And that goes for about an hour and a half, where we're bringing in local experts from the solid waste districts, compost consultants, people who know a lot of the inside information about this. And you have an opportunity not just to hear them present, but to interact with them. It is a forum. So I moderate those discussions, and we really try to get people to share what's going on in their community and ask questions of these experts to find out how they can do some community composting themselves where they live.
And listeners, we'll provide links to the events that Charlie just mentioned on our website, vpr.net/Vermont Edition, so you can find out more. I want to get back to the phone lines, Charlie. Lots of folks are lined up waiting to ask you questions. Let's go to Mary, who's calling from Starksboro. Hi, Mary. Go ahead. You're on Vermont Edition.
Hi. Hi. It's great to be able to talk to both of you. I have two questions. The first one has to do with, is it too late to plant spinach now that would winter over and then start really growing in the spring? And the second question is, we had that nasty onion fly on our crop, and I'm wondering how to treat the soil this fall to try and keep them from hatching in the soil. Thank you. Okay, sure.
The spinach, it is pretty late to be trying to grow spinach. You may get it to germinate if it stays warm the next week or two, but you're probably not going to get it to a big enough size that it'll be able to overwinter very easily. So the only caveat I'd say is if you have a cold frame or a way of covering it up so you can extend your season even further into November, that might be the way to try to plant some spinach, cover it up, keep it nice and warm in there, and well-watered, of course, and see if you can get it big enough, and then, of course, cover it up once it gets really cold with some hay mulch or some other floating row covers to overwinter it. Generally, if you're going to try to grow spinach as an overwintering crop, you want to try to get it growing and a good size by September sometime. The second question was about the onion fly. So I'm not sure if we're talking about the same pest. There is a pest called the leek moth, which attacks onions, attacks all the alliums, basically, onions, garlic, and leeks. And that has been a big problem in a number of places, including the Champlain Valley and perhaps out where you are, too. And that tends to be, you can even see them if you start peeling back your onions or if you peel back your leeks, you'll see these little worms that are kind of in there. And that's a moth that's causing all kinds of damage, and it has a number of generations a year. So the best thing to do with that, of course, is to harvest your onions, clean them all out, and then next year is to grow your onions, your leeks, your garlic under some kind of row cover, some kind of barrier, because the moth is a night-flying moth. That's what most of them are. And so if you can cover them up at night, even pull it off during the day, if you're really going to be religious about this, you know, every day come out, pull it off, put it back on. But that will protect those plants from that moth laying the eggs on there, which turn into the caterpillars, which cause the destruction. So that's usually what's the best recommendation for the leek moth that might be causing the damage on onions and other alliums.
We've got another caller asking about how to prevent a pest in the spring. Paul is on the line from Concord. Hi, Paul. Go ahead.
Hi. How are you doing?
Great.
Yeah, I just have a question. We had a slug problem this year, particularly with our kale and cabbage. And I wanted to find out if there's anything that can be done this time of year to help cut the slugs down for next year. They have to have some way of overwintering, I'm guessing, or some of their eggs or...
You were saying, Paul, slugs, is that what you said?
Yes.
Okay, I didn't hear that part. Slugs on your kale and cabbage. Yeah, so the best thing to do with that is to clean it up well. Clean up all the plant debris, all the material that might be there for them to overwinter in, because that's what they're going to be looking to do pretty soon. And if you can clean that up really well now, hopefully that will reduce the population a little bit next year. But slugs are like They're like black flies. They're just there. Every year they show up no matter what you kind of do. So you can think of some strategies next year that might help prevent the damage, especially on young plants. That's where they cause the most damage, when those little seedlings are first out there. There's a number of things you can do for slugs is to, you know, don't mulch around the plants. Keep it wide open so that, they, again, they're exposed to that sunlight and open air, which they don't really like. Some people like to put crushed shells of different types, like eggshells, seashells, oyster shells, around the plants. And what those shells will do is create this sharp surface that the slugs don't like to crawl over. And so that'll protect them until they get big enough. And there are organic baits. There's one called Sluggo, or escargot is what it's also known as. I love that name. I always say that one. It's iron phosphate is the active ingredient. And iron phosphate is toxic to slugs, but not to wildlife, pets, and people. So you can put some of that down, and there's little golden pellets you just sprinkle around the plants. And they will eat that, and then they'll die, and they'll leave your plants alone. So there's some strategies you can think about getting ready for next year.
Charlie, I'm going to combine a caller with an email. I'm going to get to the caller next, but Megan writes, is it too late to cut back dead lilacs, or do I need to wait until after they blossom next summer? Hold your answer, because I think they also relate to caller Flo, who's checking in from Putney. Hi, Flo, go ahead. Welcome to Vermont Edition.
Hi. I have had some information that it's best to let your perennials, your hydrangeas, and so forth go until the spring and then cut them back, because in the winter, then it provides food for birds and other animals. So that's a good question that I have. I know that cutting it down now might avoid pests and so forth, so I had that question.
Okay.
So two questions, Charlie, about when to cut back flowering plants
shrubs.
And bushes. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. So the rule of thumb with flowering shrubs is anything that's blooming early in the spring or early summer, so starting with the forsythia, going through lilacs and rhododendrons and spireas and weigelas and all those guys that will be blooming May till June or so, they have all set their flower buds already for next year. So any pruning you do now, you're going to be removing flowers. So that's something you always have to kind of keep in mind. Anything, any shrub that's flowering later in the season, like the buddleias, the butterfly bushes, or the rose of Sharon, those will set flower buds on new growth in the spring. So you can prune those back in the spring. So the time to prune the ones that bloom in the spring back, like the lilacs, is after they're done flowering. The time to prune the ones that bloom in later in the summer back is in the spring at any time, really. So that's what you have to keep in mind. The other thing about pruning is that you don't really want to do it this time of year, because you don't want to stimulate a lot of new growth happening as the plant is trying to get ready to go into the winter. What that could do is set up a situation where you get a lot of winter injury. So whatever you want to do, only prune if you have to prune like dead or diseased branches off, but don't prune to do any shaping or anything of that nature. For as far as the dead blossoms, though, yes, you can deadhead them at any time. But if they are forming fruits, it's fine to leave them for the birds to enjoy. And then you can clean that up in the spring.
A couple folks asking about when to plant bulbs. Jason emailed us in. It's still warm. How late can I plant tulip bulbs this year?
Did Jason say where he is?
It's an email, and I don't have information on where Jason is.
Yeah, it does vary a little bit in Vermont because of the mountains and the valleys. But yes, it is warm. It's staying warm. It continues to be warm. So there is no rush, really, to plant your spring flowering bulbs. But you do want to get them in at least a good 6 weeks before the ground freezes. So if that kind of gives you an idea. If you're in the valley, it might be December before that happens. If you're up in the mountains, you might be getting the ground to freeze, or the Northeast Kingdom, sometime in November. So generally, the rule of thumb is like mid-October or so is when you should start planting your tulips, daffodils, crocuses, all those spring flowering bulbs. And then you can go into November with them, depending on where you are. The one thing you do want to make sure is that you do plant. Don't forget about them and then discover them like in December. It's like, oh, I'll just wait till the spring and plant them. They will not make it. They will die. And so even if you discover them in early December hidden in a closet, go ahead and plant them anyway. It's better to put them in the ground. If they make it, good for them. If not, well, better luck next year.
And Victoria sent us this email. Is it too early to plant garlic?
Garlic would be planted the same time as the tulips and daffodils. So, yeah, I would wait a little bit. It's been very warm, and it continues to stay warm and dry. So you don't really want your garlic to go in too early, because it'll start growing. As you often have seen that happen during our warm falls. So I would say another couple weeks or so, maybe closer towards the end of the month, is when it'd be a nice time to put your garlic in and get it ready for fall and winter.
I want to take another caller now. Helen has been waiting in Waitsfield. Hi, Helen. Welcome to Vermont Edition. Go ahead.
Hi. I am raising acorn squash for the first time, and it is bright orange and has been orange for, I would say, 5 or 6 weeks. And I think it's supposed to turn green. It's still on the vines in the ground.
So there are, Helen, there are different varieties of acorn squash. So there are some that are the traditional green or almost blackish green kind of color. But there are some that have a brighter color to them when they're mature. So I would say that your orange acorn squash are probably ready. You can go out there and pick them and then cure them like I was mentioning earlier in the show, and they should be fine.
I've got a question from Alice in Rutland. She writes, I'm transplanting a lot of hardy perennials right now, daylilies, coneflowers, hostas, etc. How much water do they need, considering how dry it's been this summer? She says, let's see, do established perennials and young trees need extra water going into winter dormancy, especially after the stress of the summer drought?
Yes, that's exactly what they need. I'm not sure it would be extra water, but just regular watering. That's really the key thing. So going out there at least once or twice a week and giving them a deep water. Make sure the water soaks down a good 8 to 10 inches into the soil. And there's a couple fun little ways you can determine if that's what's happening. You can get a long screwdriver. You know, if you have a little toolbox around, you see one of these 8-inch or 10-inch long screwdrivers. So after you water, stick it into the soil. And if you can slide it into the soil and it keeps going very easily, then it's probably that is what's happened, especially if you have clay soil, is that the water has really soaked down very deeply, at least at 8 inches. If you try to push it in, you get a lot of resistance. It may be that you didn't get the water down deep enough. So that's one thing you can do. Another one, which is not as scientific about this, is just counting. So just stand there and count to 30. And don't lose track. But count to 30 as your hose is just watering this tree. And that usually is long enough for the water to really soak down. So that is really important to do, especially for trees and shrubs, especially for newly planted ones or ones planted this year. And even for perennials, even for easy to grow perennials like daylilies and hostas, keeping them well watered into the fall is very important.
Lita Schubert also wrote in with a question. She says, I plan on reducing my vegetable garden significantly next year. What should I do to avoid weeds taking over the fallow areas? She says, I don't have a tiller.
Okay. If she doesn't have a tiller, I was going to suggest that if you have fallow areas, it sounds like she was going to come back to maybe planting something else there at some point. The thing to put on there would be like winter rye right now, which is a cover crop that is that'll grow this time of year. It'll grow in the cooler soils, October, November. And then in the spring, you'll have to cut it down and turn it under. So if it's a big area, you really do want to have a tiller or some way to turn it under easier. If it's a small area, you probably could do it by hand. It'll be a little more work, but you certainly can turn it under that way. The nice thing about winter rye as a cover crop is not only does it add organic matter in the spring when you turn it under, it also exudes chemicals that inhibits weed growth. So it can really kind of help clean up a bed a little bit and inhibit other weeds from growing just by letting it grow in there. Of course, the key is with winter rye and winter wheat is you make sure you cut it back early enough in the season. Don't let it get so big that you end up having rye grain and rye wheat forming, unless you want to make bread, I guess. But it'd be really hard to turn under once it gets to that size.
1-800-639-2211, the number to call if you have a gardening question for Charlie Nardozzi, our resident guru. That's 1-800-639-2211. Let's go back to the phone lines now and talk with Francine, who's calling from Waterbury. Hi, Francine.
Well, you have Eric now, but...
go ahead, Eric.
Francine turned into Eric. So, anyway, we plant raspberries, and... We have become masters at growing beautiful, big, non-producing raspberry plants. And just wondering what to do. We've cut them down to about 1 foot from the ground, and they next season grow up in these huge plants. What can we do to make them produce?
Well, Eric, do you know if these are regular July-bearing raspberries, or are they what we call ever-bearing raspberries? Do you know the varieties?
They seem to produce, when they do produce, they produce well, and they produce for a prolonged period of time in the summer.
In the summer, okay.
Late summer.
So what might be happening is that you may be pruning them at the wrong time. So the ones that are growing right now, that big bushy plant that you have out there, most of those are probably what we call the primal canes or the first-year canes, what grew out of the ground. And then what will happen is that they will overwinter, and then next year that same cane will start forming flowers. Now they change their name to the flora cane, but it's the same cane. It's a second-year-old cane, and that's the one that will give you the fruit. So the time to prune them would not be now or even in the spring, but after they're done fruiting in the summer. Because once that cane is fruited, it'll just die. So you can cut those back really easily after they're done fruiting because you can see which ones they are. And then let those new canes come up from the ground again. So that way, every year in the summer, you have those canes producing fruit for you. So that might be what is going on with your raspberries. And if that doesn't seem to help, you know, make sure they have a lot of sun, because raspberries do need a lot of sun to fruit. And make sure you have good varieties. And maybe the varieties you have are not well adapted here, and you might need to try a couple others.
Let's go back to the phone lines now. Let's talk to Reuben, who is calling from Essex. Hi, Reuben. Welcome to the program.
Hello?
Go ahead.
Oh, hi. Thank you for taking my call. So I have a question, basically, about trees. We purchased a property which had already two Japanese cherry trees planted on that property, and they are not doing well. They don't get enough sun. So they are about 8 to 10 years old, and they are being overshadowed by the forest around. And I was thinking of donating those trees to someone. And fall is the time, to my understanding, of replanting the trees. So that's my question. Who can I donate it to, and how does this work? I'm not familiar in general with this process.
Sure. Well, it's a nice idea to donate some trees. The 8- or 10-year-old trees are probably pretty big. So what you'd want to do, Reuben, as far as when to dig them up, is this time of year we do a technique called root pruning. And what you would do is go around the drip line of that tree, so that's where the water naturally drips down on the outer edge of the tree onto the ground, and with a sharp spade, just dig and sever the roots all the way around. You don't dig up anything up. You're just slicing it down into the soil. And what that'll do is it'll create, allow the roots to create more side roots as they go around, so that next spring, which would be the time to actually donate the tree or dig up the tree, you could be able to dig up that same line that you did there and be able to move the tree more successfully. For an older tree like that, you really do need to be careful, because you're going to take a lot of roots off and it'll kind of set the tree back. As far as who may want the tree, that's a good question. You could talk with the town of Essex, I think you said, to see if there's any interest there. Local schools, nonprofits, maybe your neighbors are interested. Just make sure, of course, they have a lot of sun so that your tree will thrive there. But first, you know, find out someone who's interested in having it, and then we can do this whole process of root pruning and then moving it in the spring.
Well, there's an interesting question. I've got an email from Kristen. I planted 70 asparagus crowns this spring in 4x8-foot raised beds. Anything I should do to prepare the asparagus bed for winter? Should I cut back the feathery foliage? What should I be doing?
Yes, so 70, that's good. You're going to have a lot of asparagus to eat in a couple years. So what you'd want to do is let the asparagus naturally yellow, which will happen in the next month or so. And then after that's happened, you can cut them all down and remove those ferns from the soil. Now, because it is a first-year planting, just as a precaution, you might want to put some bark mulch down over that whole bed. And that would be only in the first year, and just because the roots may need a little help getting established, especially during this dry summer we've had. So putting down some bark mulch, but don't do that too soon. Wait till more like Thanksgiving time to put that down. That will help insulate the soil a little bit more, keep it a little warmer, and also prevent it from freezing and thawing through the winter, which might heave those crowns up too close to the surface. Other than that, you should be all set.
Danelle posted to Facebook, is it too late to plant a conservation mix grass seed with the possibility of frost at some point in the near future, or should I wait until spring?
No, you could still do that for the most part. Conservation mix will germinate really quickly. It's going to stay warm for the next week or two, generally, it seems. So if you can get the mix down there and then water it well, that's the key thing. Don't just put it on the grass or on the soil, but really keep it nicely watered for the week or two until it starts germinating. That's going to give you a leg up for next spring, and it should overwinter fine.
Let me get back to the phone lines now. Let's go to a caller in Jericho. Kevin is on the line. Hi, Kevin. Go ahead.
Hi. I planted beets for the first time ever this year, and I'm looking for some tips on how and when to harvest them, and if there's anything in particular I can do to, keep them.
Okay, sure. Well, as far as how and when to harvest, when you're hungry for beets, pretty much. You know, as long as that little beet is formed from a little baby beet all the way up to a full-size one, they are delicious almost at any size. In fact, they're more delicious, I think, when they're smaller. So, yes, you can harvest as you need them. And what you can do with beets is you can overwinter them, or at least part of the winter, not the full winter, but at least get them to extend their season in the ground if you want to extend it. So instead of feeling like you got to pull all your beets out and put them in a root cellar or put them in a protected spot, you can leave some right in the ground. And then when we start getting really cold weather, more towards November, and the ground is getting threatening to freeze, is get some hay or some straw mulch and bury them. Just bury the whole thing in a foot or two layer of hay or straw mulch, and that will extend it a little bit further. That'll get you into December, maybe even January, depending upon their temperatures. I have not had success getting them all the way through the winter. They tend to mush out sometime in mid to late winter a lot of times. But at least it'll give you a couple more months so that you can go out there periodically and eat the beets whenever you feel the beet needs to be eaten. How about that?
Yeah,
something like
you
that.
You couldn't leave that one alone.
No.
Let's go to Berlin now and talk with Phil. Hi, Phil. Welcome to Vermont Edition. Go ahead.
Hi, Nina. Hi, Charlie. Charlie, thanks so much for your community outreach with the community garden networks and everything.
Oh, good. Well,
bonus.
Yes. Thank you.
Really appreciate it. Listen, I have a problem with larger plots. Obviously, my brassicas this year gotten infested with the sweat midge. And I'm wondering if you think there's any reason to do a plot somewhere else on my land. And is there a control, like a neem oil or something I can suffocate them with so I can at least get at least enough kale for salads and my kitchen?
Yeah, the midge has been a really kind of big problem. I've seen it on my plants and how it's manifested in my brassicas, you know, the broccoli, cauliflower, kale, cabbages, all of those, is that it goes after that growth point. So I get the broccoli head forms, and then all the side shoots are just kind of weird shapes to them. And with kale, you get a lot of side shoots, but it kind of kills the main growth point so you don't get it, those bigger leaves. Probably just like I was talking earlier in the show about the leek moth, the best thing you probably can do is to try to cover up those plants. It seems like with all these insects, we're eventually just going to cover the whole garden. But that does seem to be like the easiest control is to grow the brassicas that you have underneath a floating row cover, underneath some kind of screen, underneath some kind of material that'll block the midges from laying their flies on those plants. You can try spraying, but you'd have to be pretty diligent about it. You can try neem oil and insecticidal soap and things of that nature. But you'd have to probably be very diligent about the timing of it to make sure you get it early enough and you stick with it throughout the season.
All right, let's take another caller. Christine is on the line from Castleton. Hey, Christine, how's it going?
Very well. I'm happy to ask this question of Charlie. I have a little bit of a problem. I'm getting back to flowers, actually. My black-eyed Susans, which have been wonderful past 2 years, very many beautiful flowers. But I noticed this year, for the first time, a lot of leaves have these big black spots and little white dot. I don't know if it's a bug that's killing it or if it's on its way out. I don't know. It's something new, and I was just concerned if there was anything I could do because I'd like to keep those flowers blooming again next year.
Yeah. So is this just occurred now, or have you seen it all season long?
Well, yeah, just this season. Well, toward the end of the season.
End of the season, yeah.
Because there were plenty of flowers, and then with the drought, I thought maybe not enough water. I looked online. They said too much water. But I know I've watered them, but not too much.
Yeah. It's always hard to know how much water sometimes. It's probably most likely some kind of fungal disease. There's lots of them out there that will go after a lot of different perennials. I think the best thing to do with black-eyed Susan, since they're such a hardy plant, is just to make sure you clean them up really well this fall. So when they're done flowering and the foliage starts to really dying back, cut it up, and then don't take that foliage and try to compost it, but just kind of discard it. Try to remove it from that area. And then next year, keep an eye on it. If you see those spots occurring earlier, you can call my spring show next spring. We'll talk about it again. Or you can start thinking of some kind of ways to control them. But usually you'll get a lot of buildup of diseases late in the season, and you start seeing them manifest. And it's really the best thing to do is just clean it up really well.
Charlie, you were talking about the fact that this fall has been relatively mild and some people are still getting tomatoes in their garden. Patricia emailed us this question: what can I do next year to hurry along late tomatoes to ripen? I've read cutting off much of the greenery in August will help.
Yeah, you can cut off not the greenery, but the growth points. That's going to send more energy into the fruit that have already set. So you don't want to take the greenery off, because then you'll get tomatoes that are not as sweet, because that's what the photosynthesis is doing, is adding sugars to those tomatoes. So you want to have nice foliage, but you can cut off all the growth points, all the new flowers that are forming, say, early September, and that will force the plant to send more energy into the fruit it has and ripen them faster.
And Sandra asks, I have St. John's wort in a grow bag. How can I keep it safe throughout the winter?
Well, a grow bag being a container, you probably want to bury it in a mulch pile or even dig a hole and bury it in the soil a little bit. You want to have a little more protection around the root system. You know, St. John's wort is a native plant and it's very hardy, but if it's left in a container out and we have a real severe winter, which is possible, that's what people are predicting, a lot of cold and some snow, a lot of snow, hopefully, then you might get a lot of damage to it. So if you can find a spot in your garden to heal it in or in a mulch pile, that might be the best thing.
And last question, Laura emailed us in. I collected dried seeds from my lupine, hollyhock, and purple coneflower. Should I plant them now or save them and wait till spring?
You can do a little bit of each, actually. So you can put some of them down now. They probably have dropped seeds all over the place, too. So you're going to see them either germinating soon or already. And then you can hold on to some for the spring and then kind of sprinkle those around for in areas where they didn't do it themselves.
Wow. Well, good brief answer. We're going to have to leave it there. But listeners, this conversation will continue online at vpr.net/Vermont Edition. Charlie Nardozzi is the host of VPR's Garden Journal, as well as a gardening consultant. Charlie, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much.
Well, thanks for having me, Nina.
Harvest and changing leaves are only one aspect of fall. For many Vermonters, autumn also signals the start of hunting season. Tomorrow on Vermont Edition, we'll talk with the Commissioner of Fish and Wildlife about the state's deer and moose population and what his department does to keep animals, humans, and their shared habitat in balance. That's tomorrow on Vermont Edition. Vermont Edition is produced by Rick Singeri, Sam Gail Rosen, and Meg Malone. Mary Williams directed the program today, and our executive producer is Patty Daniels. From the PEG TV studios in Rutland, I'm Nina Kack. Thanks for listening.